You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Everybody, welcome to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards. It is Saturday evening, May the 29th. It is Memorial Day weekend. Yankee Memorial Day anyway. You know I had to work that in. I hope you're having a good time. If you're traveling with your family, if you're just at home having a barbecue, tuning into the show tonight, whatever you're doing and wherever you may be, thank you for being here. And we are going to have what I hope will be a very lively holiday broadcast for you. So, again, it's great to be with you. Always great when we are together. Last week, we had a great show, a TPC trifecta. Sam Dixon was on with us during the first hour as we wrapped up a two-part miniseries exploring the ramifications of the Brown versus Board of Education travesty of jurisprudence. In the second hour, Brad Griffin was on with us to talk about post-Trump trends. And then, of course, in the third hour of last week's show, Lauren Witzke back for the second time this year, her encore appearance on TPC, and what I have a feeling will be just one of many to come for this young lady who was the Republican nominee for United States Senate out of the state of Delaware, and she has been making waves during that campaign and certainly since that campaign as well, and it was great to catch up with her again. Great show last week. If you missed it, be sure to go back and catch it after the fact. But in any event, what we're going to be doing tonight is sort of continuing on with a little deeper dive into the question we were exploring last week with Brad, and that is, is the mindset of our people truly beginning to change for the better? Now, I think we could certainly point to anecdotal evidence to say, hey, this might not have happened a few years ago, or hey, look at this. This is good. You wouldn't have expected that. But is the mindset truly beginning to change in a way that is sustainable? So when asking a question that broad and that important, I wanted to bring on two of the heaviest hitters we have in our bullpen, and so we're going with Kevin McDonald and Jared Taylor tonight. They are going to offer their opinions and analysis to that question when they return to the program this very evening. Kevin McDonald and Jared Taylor, two mainstays on this show. Stay tuned for that. Hopefully a lot of good news tonight. And as you settle in to the summer is now upon us. We want you to settle in with us every Saturday night during this season, this festive season. And we hope that each Saturday night you'll be informed. Certainly that is the overall mission here, but also entertained, which is a secondary goal. We try to give you the news in a way that keeps you coming back. Now, one quick announcement before we get to our two esteemed guests tonight. I had the opportunity, and it has become increasingly common these days, and what an honor it is to say that when I appear as a guest on another show, the host or the hostess of whatever live stream or podcast I'm on is already well-versed in the history of TPC. Even if it's someone I've never spoken with before, they seem to mention that before there was this person or this organization, there was TPC, and that happened again just this week. I marvel at the respect that our work receives from peers, and it's a tremendous honor to be recognized as a pioneer and a trailblazer for our cause in broadcast media. But there are great organizations out there, folks, that are doing great work, and more now than really ever before, or at least in my lifetime, I should say, certainly since I've become active over the course of my adult life, which now, I guess, about 20 years in. But I had the opportunity to appear with Dan Erickson on a Zoom online meeting of Europa Terra Nostra just this week. It was on Thursday. And folks, I can't overstate how impressed I am with that organization. For a membership organization, although it's based in Europe, I don't think they have any contemporary in America that can hold a candle to what they're doing with Europa Terra Nostra. And the focus of their organization is to foster understanding, friendship, and cooperation between nationalists at a European and international level. We at ETN, they seek to develop and use international reach in order to effectively work towards our goals. And their goals are our goals, ladies and gentlemen. So we do have, and we've been working to better foster it here at TPC with our March Around the World. But it's so great to reach out and lock arms with our brothers and sisters and cousins in Europe and be working for the cause of uplifting and bettering our people. And just want to give a shout out to Europa Terra Nostra. Also, of course, there are other organizations here in America that you really need to be supporting. Obviously, we talk about the Kosher-tified app. You hear their ads here on this program. The Kosher Question. What is the Kosher-tified app? Well, go to thekosherquestion.com. Go to thekosherquestion.com. You'll learn more there. Obviously, AmericaFirst.com. It's spelled for the website, AmericaFirst.com, M-E-R-I-C-A-1-S-T.com. This is another sort of rebranded, newer organization that is doing phenomenal work behind the scenes, and there are so many others. And that is what we've always done. Even our enemies have claimed that TPC is a nexus, or the nexus, as it was put, for this movement. And it's great to be working in cooperation with so many wonderful people, and we want to continue to do it. And with that being said, our second quarter fundraising drive just kicked off yesterday, and it will run through the month of June, and of course, we need your help. As you know, your quarterly support continues to be needed now more than ever. We're still uncertain as to what the long-term impact of being banned from all credit card processing platforms will be. We had a very good initial response from the audience during the first quarter fundraising drive. But what I do know for certain is that our quarterly fundraising drives is the fuel to our engine, and we need your considerations. If you're a regular donor to the show, you're going to get a letter in the mail from me this week. It's going to give you all the updates on what we're doing behind the scenes, some exciting stuff, I think, and some great special incentives as well, including a copy of Mark Collett's book, The Fall of Western Man. We'll talk a little bit more about this later on in the broadcast. Stay tuned for that. But first, stay tuned for this. Kevin McDonald, he's coming up next. We'll be right back with him.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. the solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, two of the best we've got, two of the best of the best. Kevin McDonald this hour, Jared Taylor the next hour. They'll both be answering the question, is the mindset of our people truly beginning to change for the better? Tackling that question first, that all-important question, is Dr. Kevin McDonald, a great friend of ours, a former professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, and the author of several books, all of which should be on your shelves, including Cultural Insurrections and his most recent, Individualism and the Western Liberal Tradition. Kevin, thanks for being with us tonight. How are you?
Hey, it's always great to be here, James, and looking forward to talking with you about these very difficult issues.
Well, with you having, of course, been that professor of psychology, before we get into what might be good news, and I want to be sure to give this a sober treatment. I don't want to look at this as we never do, through rose-colored lenses. But before we get into what could be construed as positive trends in the white community, let's first go back to the problem. You look back, Kevin, at the history of our people. Throughout recorded history, certainly going back to the age of exploration, we could start there on into the American experiment. I mean, we were a nation of conquerors, of inventors, of explorers, of people who didn't suffer fools lightly. How did we go from that to where we are now, this simpering, apologetic, afraid to be called a name type of people? Now, obviously, I'm not talking about people like us or people who are tuned into our program or people who read the Occidental Quarterly or your fantastic website, the Occidental Observer. We could probably spend 3 hours on that. We have about 5 minutes. What would you say would be the answer? How did we go from that to this in the span of just a few centuries, a couple of centuries?
Yeah, I was just I just tweeted a thing that Kellogg's cereal just decided to put out things on their cereal boxes with all this gay pride stuff and you can choose your own pronouns and all that. And it just remembered in my book on individualism that, you know, back around, I think it was 1915, you had a totally different elite. Harvey Kellogg, who started that business, was there with Edison and Harvey Firestone of the Firestone Rubber Company, the president of Stanford University, the president of Harvard University. They were all there. It was a race betterment conference. This is just imagine 100 years ago where the top people in America were. It's just radically different. And, you know, I do think there is I wrote this book, Individualism in the Western Liberal Tradition, and I don't talk about the rise of this new predominantly Jewish elite until around the turn of the 20th century, you know, the late 19th century, when we had so many immigrants from Eastern Europe that were totally different. They were, you know, Zionists, they were politically radical. And here we are, where these people were very upwardly mobile. They took over the media, and, you know, even by the 1930s, they had a large position in the media. By the 1950s, they controlled all the television stations, the major radio outlets. And the same thing happened in the universities, especially in the 1960s. I was there at the University of Wisconsin. You could see the turnover. That suddenly you had, I was in the philosophy department at the time, and, you know, there were these old professors that were there who were basically retiring at the time, but then all this new wave of Jewish academics coming in. And, you know, the academic world is, we think of it as, you know, ivory tower and out of touch and everything, but it's a very important institution. If you read, you know, the top media like the Washington Post, New York Times, these professors are always writing op-eds. They have produced the atmosphere of the university, which is way on the left now. You know, this kind of race betterment conference that I'm talking about in 1915 could never happen now. Anyone who espouses those ideas couldn't even give a talk at a university. When you have people like Ann Coulter, you know, who are prohibited, or, you know, even mainstream conservatives. You know, I think Mark Levin was prevented, or what's his name? You know, it's just been a radical shift here. And this critical race theory is absolute poison. And just can't even imagine it.
Well, that's one of the things. Of course, the critical race theory is something that even predominantly establishment Republicans are beginning to push back on.
Yeah.
And you talked about this this cycle, the ebbs and flows of civilization. Again, leaning on your background in psychology, I brought this up earlier in the year. I believe it may have been Mark Weber who was the guest. It was back in January, but there was a Scottish advocate. He was a judge, a writer, and a historian who served as a professor of history at the University of Edinburgh. That had to be back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, but his name was Alexander Tytler, and this is what Tytler wrote. A democracy is always temporary in nature. It cannot exist as a permanent form of government. A democracy will continue to exist up until the time that the voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates who promise them the most benefits, with the result being that every democracy will finally collapse, which is followed by a dictatorship. The average age of the world's greatest civilizations from the beginning of history has been about 200 years. During those 200 years, and I think this is interesting because if you look at the timeline of America, where are we at? Those nations always progress through the following sequence. And this is what I want to get your opinion on, Kevin. And basically what Tytler puts forth here is there is a cycle of nations, a cycle of civilizations, from birth to decadence, then to renewal. And he says that it starts with bondage. From bondage, it goes to faith, from faith to courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage, and there the cycle begins anew. So could you say, and with regards to, listen, the malevolent forces that we know exist that have taken over media, academia, all of the institutions for the public consumption. Yes, that hasn't helped us, but these same usual suspects were certainly engaged in usury and all sorts of funny business going back into Europe, and they were simply always expelled when they became a threat to the native population. That hasn't happened here, but I bring that up to say that I think that the buck has to stop with white men. Yes, we could say, well, these groups have done other things to us, but only white men would have allowed that to have occurred. Or maybe we were too good or too lazy or too complacent. But would you say, Kevin, that what we have witnessed, and we have had the misfortune of being born perhaps in this nadir of the American experiment, is just the typical ebbs and flows of a civilization, from rough and hardy people who get complacent, who get lazy, who begin to suffer, and then they begin a renewal. Are we maybe on the back end of that track and perhaps approaching a better time sometime in the hopefully near future?
Well, that's certainly an optimistic way to think about it. Certainly some of those stages, like, you know, the stage of you know, freedom and liberty, are probably only going to be found in the West. At times civilizations have just fallen apart, like ancient Rome. And the problem now is that we are facing more than just sort of political defeat. We are facing genocide, for lack of a better term. That's what I'm, you know, we're getting submerged demographically.
Well, we're going to continue to talk with Kevin McDonald about that. He's quite right. I mean, this isn't just about the fall of a political ideology. This is about the fall of the greatest people that have trod this earth as far as advancements in technology and contributions to all of humanity. We'll continue with Kevin McDonald right after this.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Moderna said Tuesday its COVID-19 vaccine was 100% effective in a study of adolescents aged 12 to 17, making it the second shot behind Pfizer's to demonstrate high efficacy in younger age groups. The company said it plans to ask the Food and Drug Administration to expand the emergency use of its COVID vaccine for teens as early as next month. This week, 50% of all American adults have been vaccinated. The Biden administration ended an inquiry into a possible connection between the origins of the coronavirus and a lab in Wuhan, China. The State Department launched the previously undisclosed inquiry last fall under President Trump, but the effort was shut down in the spring by President Biden. They claim the quality of its work was flawed. Dr. Anthony Fauci says he's not convinced COVID-19 developed naturally. I think we should continue to investigate what went on in China until we find out to the best of our ability what happened. End quote. USA Radio News.
I'm hungry. What's to eat?
Beans again.
Did somebody say hungry? Pistol Pete's Jerky at PistolPete'sJerky.com. A herd of delicious flavors. Break Bronco busting hunger. Lasso up your order at PistolPete'sJerky.com.
Thanks, Pistol Pete.
I made it myself. PistolPete'sJerky.com. Tell them Pete sent you.
PistolPete'sJerky.com is the official beef jerky of the Chosen Generation Radio Show. When you place your order, you'll receive two free U.S. Constitutions and a U.S. flag sticker. One constitution for you to read cover to cover, and the second to pass on to your friends, family, or loved ones. Go to PistolPete'sJerky.com and use discount code CGR to get an additional 10% off. PistolPete'sJerky.com and place your order today.
Senator John Kennedy is lashing out on the reckless spending in Washington, D.C. Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau reports.
Republican Senator from Louisiana John Kennedy is blasting a bipartisan bill that calls for billions of dollars in spending on science and technology research. The bill is being framed by its supporters as an effort to shore up American technological superiority against the growing threat of China. But Kennedy tells Fox News that's not what the bill does.
Here's what the bill will do. $120 billion in foreign aid.
I don't know why we can't use that money for infrastructure. I don't know why we have to give money to countries that hate us. They should be able to hate us for free. $50 billion to the big tech semiconductor companies. We all know how broke big tech is. I guess they can use the money to develop more efficient algorithms to censor us. $80 billion to the infamous National Science Foundation.
USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to compliment what you're hearing on the radio tonight with the written word, I would encourage you to go to theoccidentalobserver.net, T-O-O, theoccidentalobserver.net. That's Kevin's website, and he's always got incredible content there for your edification. So be sure to check it out. So, Kevin, we were talking about, of course, I think it's important to understand the long-term effects of how a society can rise and fall. I think it's important that we differentiate between a country and a nation, of course, when we're talking about these cycles of civilizations. I am not at all married to a country or a form of government. My first, second, and third loyalties are to my nation or to my people. And as long as my people survive, we can call our community whatever you want to call it. It doesn't have to be called the United States of America. It doesn't have to be called a republic or a democracy or whatever. As long as it's in the best interest of our people, I think it has been our people that have dropped the ball. Psychologically speaking, and yes, there have been outside actors who have harmed us, but I don't think we have showed the sort of courage over the my lifetime, especially men of the West, I'm talking about here, Kevin, that you would have seen from better generations going back over the centuries. But psychologically speaking, Kevin, what needs to happen? How can we get back on the horse? I saw where you had tweeted out this week that white Americans are beginning to also realize that they belong to a race. You wrote, anxiety about demographics is entirely reasonable given all the anti-white rhetoric emanating from high places and throughout the educational system. Critical race theory, you mentioned that a moment ago. In such a context, whites are bound to identify as white and see themselves as having interests as white. Is this the first step in our psychological reckoning?
Well, I certainly hope so. In chapter 8 of my book, I do talk about some mechanisms that can lead to a renaissance among us. The fact is, with all this identity politics, the people on the left are just obsessed with race. Everything comes down to race. I saw this cartoon, you know, a glass half full, a glass half empty, you know, optimists see a glass half full, pessimists see a glass half empty, Democrats see or the people on the left see it as racist or something like that. I mean, it's all race. and when that happens, you know, white people are going to identify, they're going to see themselves as white. You can't help it. The fact is, we do have psychological mechanisms, the social identity mechanisms, that when these lines become clearer, you identify more as white, and especially when there's so much anti-white hate out there now. I mean, critical race theory is really about anti-white hate and guilt mongering. And at some point, a lot of, you know, the fact is, as you say, so many of our people have just knuckled under, and we've accepted this. The problem partly is that it's been framed as a moral issue. And white people are particularly prone to, you know, to wanting to be a good person. You know, our societies have never been going way back. And this, this I think is ethnic, that our societies have not been based as much on kinship as other cultures, you know, like the Middle Eastern cultures, China, Africa. We were much more individualistic. But it's very important for us to have a good reputation in the community. That's what it's really based on. I want to be able to trust you. I want to be able to, you know, think you're an honest person, someone I can do business with. It doesn't matter what your family connections are. So when I hire someone, it's not going to be, you know, my close relative like they do in Africa or India or China or any, those other places. It's going to be someone who I can trust. I think is going to do a good job. And that's really the basis of our culture. The whole individualistic capitalist ethic is based on reputation. And that's been our downfall, really, because now the people who create these moral communities are people in the media and in the academic world. And they are just unanimous that, you know, the white people are evil and all that. But again, all those messages of hate, even messages that white people are becoming a minority. There's been research on this. They actually make white people more conservative, more concerned about the future. Because you think about it, you know, when we become a minority, you have to hope that these hordes that are coming in here are going to treat us nicely. And guess what? They're not. I mean, those messages of hate and white evil are not going away. And so many people now in the Biden administration, this woman who was just appointed the head of the Civil Rights Division, the Justice Department, forget her name right now, but she is a radical black superior, you know, an ethnic activist, and she hates white people. And so those people are now in power, and that's not going to change. So we have to, you know, the point is that white people are going to become more conscious. And we can only hope that there will be a renaissance of white identity and a sense that we are being dispossessed at the minimum. We'll see.
Well, that's, of course, the overall topic of the conversation that we're having tonight with you now and soon to be with Jared in the next hour. Are things beginning to turn in a way that we can sink our teeth into? But you're quite right. And we'll actually explore that a little bit with you. That's going to be the focus of the entire next segment. I wanted to set the table with you again with regard to your background in psychology to try to get a better understanding. I mean, we've talked about this for years and years. We're not covering new ground here, but how could a people become so guilt-ridden and ashamed of themselves and their ancestors? It has to be. I mean, Kevin, can you think of any other population, any other race throughout history that has taken on this sort of persona that whites have over the course of the last several decades?
No, I mean, I absolutely cannot. I can't think of any society that sort of willingly committed cultural suicide as we are. And again, it has to be explained. I do my best to try to explain it in terms of these moral communities and the people who are now establishing these moral communities. But, you know, and I think there is an element of sort of decadence that so many of us are, you know, comfortable. We're relatively wealthy. You look back in history, even a couple of centuries ago, we are rich. And it's so easy to just, you know, get in your RV and travel or whatever it is you want to do and pursue your hobbies. And you don't even worry about these things. But again, the world is intruding on that. I mean, people... if you have grandchildren or children, you have to think about what's the future going to be like for them. When you already see, you know, that you have all these grants going to black people specifically, like scholarships and everything is tilted towards that now. Are you going to be able to get into school?
Well, you actually hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that. See, that's my concern. That's your concern. Your concern is for the collective. My concern is for the collective. I am concerned. I mean, yes, we fight for our past, our present, and our future. But I am certainly more concerned about my children, the future of my children, than receiving a temporary pat on the head by our overlords who are smiling as they accept my surrender. That's not my surrender or your surrender, but our surrender as a people. I'm not going to play into that. I'm going to fight against that, and I have my entire life. And of course, your work has certainly been absolutely integral. If we are going to have a future, it's going to be built off of those who stand on the shoulders of people like you.
Well, I do think that there's a lot of white liberals who are, you know, they're totally okay with all this. They do feel guilty and so on. But when you start, when they start seeing that their child can't get into a good university, especially a public university, and they have to pay, you know, enormous tuition to get indoctrinated in all this, and they may not even be able to get into a good university. I mean, I saw something at Princeton. The great majority of undergraduates are now non-white. Good heavens. This is, you know, established by all white people. Woodrow Wilson was the president. He was totally on board with race and everything. Here we are. And when, if they are, as they want to do it, they are doing this. They're forcing the sort of rezoning of the suburbs. So they have, you know, multifamily units that are now going to be, you know, opened up to non-whites. So all these suburbs of middle class, upper middle class white people are going to be invaded. That is something that is going to turn a lot of white people, because white liberals, despite all their rhetoric and how they vote and everything, they're the first to get the hell out when the schools go down and when their neighborhood goes down.
We're going to continue with Kevin McDonald for one more segment, and we're really going to get down to the meat and potatoes of why I wanted to have Kevin on tonight, and it's going to serve as a wonderful segue into the second hour, where Jared Taylor will pick up right where Kevin is ending. Is the mindset of our people beginning to change? Kevin just talked. Even liberals, in some cases, are getting fed up with it. We'll tell you
that. The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Recent studies show that parents who smoke in the home are more likely to have children who smoke.
Yes, in fact, my brother, he's 22 now, he told me and my father that's why he started smoking. One of the reasons why he started smoking is because my dad was around, you know, and they saw my dad smoking. My dad said, okay, I don't want you to smoke. I don't want you to, you know, watch what I'm doing.
Recent studies also show that in homes where parents don't smoke, their children usually don't smoke either.
I am the way I am because my grandparents taught me what not to do. They gave me morals. They gave me belief. They gave me something to believe in. They just taught me well. I love them. I do.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I have a question. Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? I believe that great nations and great civilizations spring from a people who have a moral compass.
I don't think a civilization can long endure that does not have respect for all human life, born and not yet born.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
One more time, I want to say. Welcome back, everybody. One more segment with the incomparable Kevin McDonald. Be sure to check out his website, theoccidentalobserver.net. Kevin also serves as the editor for the Occidental Quarterly. I am holding in my hand, as I speak, the spring 2021 issue of TOQ, which always offers Western perspectives on man, culture, and politics. Kevin has served dutifully as its editor for a number of years now. This issue is fantastic, and it includes pieces from several of our favorites here at TPC, including Andrew Frazier, and who, of course, was with us for our March Around the World, representing Australia back in March, and then Andrew Joyce and others. If you want to subscribe to TOQ, I can let you know how to do that. Just shoot me an email, james@thepoliticalcesspool.org, james@thepoliticalcesspool.org. If you're a subscriber to TOQ, the spring issue was mailed out a couple of weeks ago. We'll be getting to you on summer pretty soon, but Kevin is doing great work here, there, and everywhere. And one more segment tonight. He's one of our most regularly featured guests, and for good reason. We're talking about the psychology of whites, and is it beginning to change for the better? Kevin, when we're talking about a broad issue like this, I sometimes revert back to my canned remarks. And that is, of course, that it seems as though all human beings need food, shelter, and water. Over the course of the last 50 to 100 years, whites, unfortunately, have developed a need for one other essential component to survival, and that is status and social acceptance. And unfortunately, they're seeking it from the people who absolutely wish to destroy them. However, I believe a lot of this, Kevin, is a mile wide and an inch thick. I mean, certainly there are some people who are too far gone mentally and psychologically. There's just, you're not going to be able to save them. They're too far gone. But I think the most people out there, there are people like me and you and the people that we regularly feature on this program who have inflexible beliefs, and they are beliefs, core beliefs, that we have paid a price for having. Those are real beliefs. We are not going to be moved off of our position because we have reached this position based upon truth and logic and research and so many other critical factors. There are also people on the other end of the spectrum who, for whatever reason, have these beliefs. They seek to destroy us. They seek to do whatever, but you're not going to sway them either. But the vast majority of people just go along to get along. And I think that when the day comes when our ideas, your ideas and my ideas and the ideas of this program and your publication, when they become the path to success, when they become trendy and fashionable and in vogue again, and that day can come, ladies and gentlemen, because we do have truth on our side. It's a lot easier, I think, it's in terms of reclamations, for reclamation's sake, it's easier when you have truth on your side than it would have been for our enemies to push all of this lunacy on us, like you're not the gender, you're the gender you feel, you're not the gender your chromosomes say you are. I mean, it's easier to push our ideas, I can tell you. So anyway, Kevin, that being said, is it just that simple? Of course, if I knew how to recapture control of the institutions, we would have done it already. But do you believe that when you need to have our positions to get a job, when you need to have our positions to be accepted in polite society, that the vast majority of people just will become true believers relatively suddenly?
Absolutely, they will. And that is sort of a sad commentary in a way, but the fact is that's the way so many of us work. And as you say, social acceptance is so important. And right now, especially, in Western cultures, being a good person, being a moral person, where morality is now defined by these elites in the media, Hollywood, and so on, that is a critical thing. And it's so hard for us to really break into the big media. Standard conservative rhetoric is still obsessed with, they won't talk about race. They won't talk about white interest. They won't talk about white identity. Now, Tucker Carlson is edgy in that, and I think he knows how far he can go. But he recently talked about replacement, white replacement, and that's exactly the thing that psychologically, this is, I emphasize in my book, that when white people are told you are being replaced as voters, demographically, you can have less power in the future, they become way more conservative. They become more you know, they identify more as white because they realize that's what it's about. And he's repeated it a couple times since that one time that got so much attention. The ADL was all over him, complaining about replacement. So you know, Tucker Carlson then actually put on his screen, he said he had this quote from the ADL that was very worried about Israel being replaced by the Palestinians. If they just had one state over there, the Palestinians would still outnumber them, or they'd be at least around 50% now, and they have very high birth rate. They would be able to submerge, you know, the founding population, the Jewish population of Israel, and they thought that was a horrible thing. But when whites are being replaced, it's no big deal, and you're a racist, horrible bigot if you think so. But you know,
and not only that, the ADL is they're pushing it. They're pushing it when we're the ones on the other end of it. Israel has a fantastic domestic policy. If we could take their domestic policy, we'd be all right.
We'd be fine, and you know, we would expel foreigners. We would have, you know, we would, you know, if we needed labor, we would import people, but they would have a term and they would then leave. They would never be allowed to be citizens, and you'd have sort of partition where these other groups would be sort of walled off and not able to really affect the political culture of your country. And that's what it is now. It's a brutal regime. There's no question about it. And people on the left are now finally starting to talk about it. It's only the left, though. And one of the things that the mindless conservatives, people like Hannity, they keep, Laura Ingraham, all these people, they just idealize Israel. And, it's part of this, Christian Zionist mindset, Netanyahu's wonderful and all that, but they won't ever get into this sort of massive hypocrisy and double standard that the American Jewish community has regarding Israel. Yeah, Israel is an ethno state, and that's what we want for us as well. And we should have a sort of universal ethnic nationalism as a moral concept, by the way. You know, because again, our people need to have a moral vision to do anything. If we think we're doing something really evil, well, that's not going to fly with most white people. And we have to have the idea that what we're doing is morally right.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's important for whites. Whites are a moral people, and whites are a law and order type of people, and whites don't like disruptions, and they don't like when our nests are disturbed and things of that nature. And that's why I think, to another extent, that they go along to get along, much to our detriment, just to sort of keep the peace. We've got to that's good for to an end, but at some point it can become a little bit too much, and we're certainly experiencing that now. However, what we've been talking about is that Kevin and I agreed earlier that it's just human nature. You believe in whatever the herd believes in. Most people naturally just drift with the tide. And if and when right-thinking people like us can wrest control of the institutions and the levers of power again, it's not going to take that long to get public support back on our camp. It's certainly already there within the Republican Party. And so, Brad Griffin, even while it is not trendy and fashionable and in vogue to have these ideas, there are still causes for concern that we can point to. And when we're with Jared in the next hour, we're going to pinpoint those a little more accurately and actually identify them. But Kevin, Brad Griffin was with us last week, and he wrote an article, and it included 20 points on why things are beginning to go our way now, even with the deck still stacked against us. You wrote that it was an excellent analysis of the GOP. You read that article. What were your biggest takeaways with about 2 minutes remaining?
Yeah, well, as he noted, the Republican Party is becoming the party of the white working class. And I don't think that can be reversed. White working class is not into this, you know, critical race stuff, transgender crap. They're not into Black Lives Matter, any of that stuff, and they understand that their political interests, have got to be met, and they can only really be met in the Republican Party. And I think Trump, you know, for all his faults, and he has faults, he has transformed the Republican Party and in that direction. And you got to get rid of these old guards, you know, the Paul Ryan types. There's the Liz Cheney types that harken back to this Republican Party that was a party of big business and country club types and the small business too. But so it's going to be the party of working class and small businesses, people, and these are and white people, frankly. And they've already been called the White People's Party for a long time. Going back, I remember, I think John Stewart had a, you know, when the Republicans had a convention somewhere, put up a big billboard, you know, welcome to Minneapolis or whatever, or the convention of the White People's Party or something. It's seen that way, and it is that way, and it ought to be that way. We have to coalesce as a race in a political party.
Well, I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if the reclamation of America's destiny is going to occur, it'll occur because of the work that men like Kevin MacDonald are doing and have done. He really sets an example for the rest of us to follow. Great friend of mine, great friend of the truth, TheOccidentalObserver.net. Kevin, love you, brother. Talk to you again very soon.
Thanks a lot, James.